Monday night on the Fan pregame. Welcome in, Ailish and Justin, for the next hour. We got a full slate of basketball on the network after us, Indiana and the Raptors with a 7 o'clock pregame show here on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1, and then Golden State and the Clippers with a 10:30 start. So we'll do a little basketball chat with our buddy Joey Cash, Joe Cacharo from The Score in a little bit. And then we're going to chat with Liam McHugh around 6:35 to do a little hockey. There's like a lot going on. This weekend was full of everything. If you liked any sport, you basically got to cover.
Oh yeah.
This past weekend, so we'll
good
try to
slug mode weekend.
It was a lot of couch time. We'll try to go through and touch on as much as we can. But as it's Monday, we've started a new tradition. Week two of our new tradition. So now it's happening. About the upcoming Four Nations face-off, Canada and all the other teams are going to be announcing their roster around December 4th. So we have about two more weeks after this show to predict our roster. We showed you last week who was already locked in by Hockey Canada. So that's McDavid, Crosby, Marchand, Point, McKinnon, and Makar. And we locked in. And the goal of this between Justin and I is to have 100% success rate. Mm-hmm. So we want to lock them in and hope that we're accurate. So we added Marner, Reinhardt, Stone, Pietrangelo, Taves. And now we are left with another opportunity to lock in five more players.
This is probably the hardest it'll be.
It's already getting very difficult.
Because we only have like four, maybe three to do next week. Obviously, there's a couple of layups last week. But quickly, before we look forward and add these five new players, any regret based on who we added last week? That being Marner, Reinhardt, Stone, Pietrangelo. And
no, I feel pretty great about those ones.
I think we might have been a little early on Mark Stone, but I think he's going to make the team. He just kind of, he's just out of place.
Well, this is the trouble where we go through and, you know, if someone has a bad week, we've locked him in. It's this point of time where the scouts are probably at these games thinking the same thing. Like, ooh, you know, if Stone has three bad games in a row, is he off the roster?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he is. So I'm quite confident that we're batting 1,000 right now.
Okay, let's keep that confidence.
But this
up.
Is where it gets tricky, because five new players that we're going to unveil to you all tonight, I think we were confident on two.
Were we?
Yes, two. This is how the process works. We'll pull back the curtain a bit. We come to the table with a couple names without talking to each other, and then cross compare. And I think we had two overlapping names.
Yeah, I think so.
So
we worked it out. But I think the big question was, do we finally add our goaltender?
And we
or
will
one
be,
goaltender.
We will be adding a goaltender.
We decided to add a goaltender, but we're probably not picking the goaltender who is playing the best right now. Frankly,
so let's start there.
Yeah, I mean, the goaltending thing, again, this is the crazy piece of the puzzle that everybody's trying to figure out here. The goaltending situation in Canada is not great. Jordan Binnington is really the only one that, I guess, over time accrued enough cachet, enough pedigree to put himself in position. He probably has the advantage, and does have the advantage, of playing for the guy who's putting together the team.
Correct.
So I think that gives him a bit of an upper hand. But you look around the league right now, and there are two goaltenders from Canada who are playing quite well, really, at the top of the league. Logan Thompson has made a statement here. He's not lost in regulation for the Washington Capitals yet. His record on the season is 8-0-1. He's allowed 11 goals in his five November starts. He's been awesome. And if we're doing the meritocracy thing, Logan Thompson makes a lot of sense. So does Cam Talbot, who's been excellent for Detroit. Mm-hmm. Better save percentage all of a sudden than Connor Hellebuck on the year, which is definitely something that you can write home about. So those are guys making a statement, but those are guys who are on the outside looking in probably to start the year. Mm-hmm. So I'll dish it to you. Are we choosing either of those guys as our goalie?
I think we're choosing Jordan Binnington because it feels like the safe decision. I don't think there are three goaltenders better than Jordan Binnington that will make the Canada roster. And so I think we're locking him in almost as a safety valve, because I do think that out of the guys you named, Logan Thompson, even Aiden Hill, Cam Talbot, Stuart Skinner, who I got to see Saturday Night Live, I think those ones, whether you're slotting them as one or two or three, I think there's still room for time, for some flexibility for us too, as the people creating this fake spreadsheet. So I think Jordan Binnington, let's say he ends up as the number two goalie. I think he's not going to end up as the number four goalie, is all I have to say. So we're locking in Jordan Binnington.
Yeah, it's a strategic play. Binnington, his relationship with the GM, his standard, he's kind of a gatekeeper. If no one can surpass him, then he might be the starter. But I think he's on this team, and that's why we're putting him in there. Okay, tell me a little bit. You were in the building, Scotiabank Arena, Edmonton, Toronto, on Saturday night. Evan Bouchard, the narrative around him is certainly spinning. He was the guy, you know, when they're chasing down a Stanley Cup in Edmonton, There's no way you couldn't put him on this team. He's definitely one of the best seven defensemen from Canada in the NHL, but it's been a really, really rough start, and that came to a head, it seemed, on Saturday night.
Yeah, he had a couple really big mistakes against the Maple Leafs, who exploited them, ended up winning the game, of course, in overtime. And I think I was watching, I wasn't thinking about what we were going to do on Monday, but, you know, his name's obviously floated out as one of these, maybe like even a third pairing defenseman for Canada. And I think when we go through this process over the next couple of weeks, we'll see there's a lot of people that could slot into that role. But maybe it's recency bias, but as soon as we came down today to start to write our roster out, I just felt like, I don't know. I don't know if I trust him. He made some pretty glaring mistakes. And, you know, I listened to the panel afterwards as well. They were like, are you going to feel comfortable about that if you're Team Canada? And I said, no. So I just don't think that I felt the level of confidence in one game sample size. Obviously, I don't get to watch all the Edmonton Oilers games live. But if we're trying to hit 100% accuracy with our choices for Team Canada, I think we can wait another week to fill out that spot. So Evan Bouchard's not being mentioned today in stone, but it was, I guess, an eye-opening opportunity to see him up close, and I just wasn't thrilled.
I frankly don't think he's going to make this team. I think for two reasons. I think there's, you know, that lack of trust, the mistakes that he was making and has been making this year, but also there's a redundancy here. Like, his greatest strength is being a really dominant power play quarterback, maybe the best at that position in the league, maybe considering the environment, though, with the Edmonton Oilers. Clearly, he can play with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and be very, very productive. But is he going to see number one power play time over Cale Makar in this tournament?
No.
I don't know. He might be like a smidge better offensively in that position and playing with Connor McDavid, but he might give something up defensively while he's out there in these offensive positions. If Cale Makar is going to run your number one power play, which I assume he will, do you need Evan Bouchard? For that reason, he's not on the list now, and he may not be on the team at all, for us at least. And we'll see what Doug Armstrong has to say.
Okay, so we're naming people we didn't name. Let's name some people we did name. So we locked in Binnington. We added two defensemen.
Yeah, let's finish the defenseman piece.
Okay, so we have added Shea Theodore, and we have added Josh Morrissey.
Yeah, I think the pairs thing is pretty key.
And in that order, because Theodore and Pietrangelo, we've paired them up, whether they're going to play that way or not. And Morrissey is currently without a pair, but it'll be time to have a pair for him.
Morrissey's been great. I think he just deserves to be on this team on merit. But also, I think the Theodore-Pietrangelo combination is key.
Yes.
Like, this is going to be coming together really quickly if you can just have immediate chemistry with guys who are going to anchor your blue line. And we have a pair with Tays and Makar as our number one pair. I think that just makes all the sense in the world. Vegas has been great. Theodore and Pietrangelo have been great. Josh Morrissey has been the best defenseman on the best team. I think those guys are safe plays for now. We'll see how aggressive they get with these six and seven spots.
Okay, so we have five defensemen, one goaltender, and now we're getting into the remaining forward spots that we have. I think the one that we both came to the table with today that we felt the most confident about was Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
And many people might not be super set on putting him where we've got him slotted. Well, you'll see the graphic in a minute, because right now, he might be a 13th forward, but I think he'll be on this team. I think this is a great opportunity to put Bedard with people like McDavid and Crosby and McKinnon and Point, like the players that he has grown up idolizing and will want to take over in the footsteps of and be Captain Canada one day. I think this is the best opportunity for him to get that experience, obviously, why they've kind of created this, you know, makeshift Four Nations thing that never existed, was to give some players more international experience that haven't got it yet, who haven't played at the major, you know, international games like the Olympics, because that's around the corner. So I think Bedard will be on this team. Do I think he'll be top line on the wing with McDavid and Marner? I don't know. But I think he'll be wearing the jersey, even if he's the 13th forward, so I felt secure putting him in today.
Yeah, kind of a Binnington play. Like, he's probably not going to be playing top line minutes.
We're looking for locks,
I think
though.
He's going to be on this team. You're right. Hockey coaches at pretty much every level do this. They want a part of the future now just to see it, because they're going to be so instrumental maybe at the Olympics in, what is it, 18 months from now? Maybe a little less than that, 16 months. So I think that's it. Yeah, you slide him in that 13th role. If he's playing well, maybe he slides into a bigger role and plays a prominent role for Canada. But I think Connor Bedard will be there for that reason, and also the marketability aspect. I think the NHL probably wants
him
there.
They can't
Connor
leave
Bedard,
him.
He's going, and I'm pretty comfortable with that. It did come down the next one to this. We debated Zach Hyman versus Mark Scheifele. The left wing side for Canada is pretty light at current moment. Scheifele is a center. He shoots right. Flexing him over maybe didn't make the most sense, so we didn't want to pigeonhole ourselves too much. But I still think he's more deserving than Zach Hyman, but we ultimately went with Zach?
We did go with Zach Hyman. We know that he has not had the greatest start to his season. We know last year he was a 50-goal scorer plus in the playoffs. But I just think he's a guy that is really versatile, can play like PK grind. He can be a grinder. He could be a 13th forward at any point. I think we're going to end up...
The guy who comes out for Bedard.
Yeah, I think we're going to end up adding Shifley anyway, but I just think that Zach Hyman, I think he'll be on this team. I don't know if he's going to play with McDavid, which is a simple way to kind of slot that chemistry, but you raise a good point off air. Is like, does McDavid want to play with Hyman in like a three-game tournament? I don't know, but this is the first time that we were feeling a little uneasy about entering a name into the chart, but Hyman is in there.
Yeah, Hyman's in there. I think it's mostly for me because the left wing situation is what
it is. It's a
little
weak, yeah.
If I'm McDavid, I don't know if I want to play with Hyman. If I'm Canada, I don't know if I want to pair them together because that means a lot of minutes for Zach Hyman. You mentioned he can be flexed out of that position if you're chasing a game, so on and so forth. But, you know, it hasn't been a great start of the season for him. I think because of the position he gets there, and that's why we went just by a hair over Mark Scheifele for now.
Yeah.
It's going to be real difficult next week.
Oh, next week sucks already.
I think only four players next week for us.
Yes.
But it's going to be difficult because, I think there's seven spots left.
We might have the benefit of some leaks by next week.
We need people to start talking.
We need Friedge to help us out here and say,
we might have to bring
we've heard that Lafreniere is going to make the team. So these are some names on the outside looking in still. We got a couple spots on the forward and the defenseman sections to fill out. But it's going to come down to performance the next couple weeks. We feel like GMs, don't you?
Anxiety ridden? Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Choosing who's going to play for Team Canada. So big things to come. All right. We'll shift over to some NBA talk. As we mentioned, the Raptors hosting the Pacers tonight at 7:30 start. We'll have the pregame up on 7 o'clock on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. So let's talk about the worst team in the NBA, but we'll make it fun because we got a great guest, Joe Casherio joining us, the SCORE lead Raptors NBA reporter and host of the Unfiltered show. Joey Cash, how are you? Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Mr. Cuthbert, what's going on? Thanks for having me.
We're good. And I jokingly said, the worst team in the NBA because technically they are. Statistically, we know it, but it doesn't feel like that. And I think a really fun terminology I've heard specifically on our network as well, but a Raptors ethical tank job. And I think that's a really nice way to put it because ethical in the way of like we want to watch. They're right in it. They're pushing defending champs to overtime and they're losing on calls that were kind of called back in the end. So watching this team and watching the growth and development, I think that their record does not speak to the fun, energetic, and pushy team that we're seeing on the court.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, given that we came into this season pretty aware of what the team was trying to do from a long-term perspective, Masai openly called it a rebuilding team pretty much the first time in his tenure here. Darko on opening night talked about how this season was about the process over results. And, for a lot of people that raises alarm bells of, well, okay, there's going to be a tanking year and it's going to get ugly. And from a wins and losses perspective, it has been. But to your point, there's, what people call an ethical tank in that it's not like they're out there purposely trying to lose, or it at least it doesn't look like that, right? It's not a shameless tank. They've got a bunch of young guys. They're an extremely banged up team that, quite frankly, is playing above their heads most nights, competing with teams and against lineups that they have no business competing against, on paper. And the last game against Boston is a perfect example of that. And so I do think it's the best of both worlds. And listen, no one wants to watch losses. But if you're going to watch a losing team that is clearly, has their eyes on the lottery, the way you want to do it is have exciting games, competitive losses, and see growth in young guys. And I think they've checked all those boxes this season. The only part of it that, isn't going according to plan is obviously they would like a lot of this development to be happening with Scottie Barnes on the court, and because of injury, that hasn't happened yet.
Okay, I'm going to push back on the ethics just a little bit because it feels like if you have, just a bump or a bruise, you might be sitting out. If you're the Raptors, load management is definitely a thing, and it's definitely a bigger thing on a larger scale with more important pieces in the NBA right now. But, as part of this whole plan, hey, if you're not 100%, we don't need to push it.
Look, I can't answer that. Honestly, I don't know, but I don't think anyone does outside of the Raptors' walls. But I will say, when Quickly took that really hard fall on opening night, did I think he was hurt? Yes. Did I think he was going to end up missing 2 weeks because of it? No. Scottie a little different. He took a pretty mean elbow from Jokic in the face, broke a bone in his face. That one's a little different. But to me, the Quickly one is the one that stands out where it was like, all right, I, personally not sure he was going to miss that much time, not doctor at the same time. You know, Olynyk and Brown haven't played at all yet this year. Not sure if they actually could if they need him in two, but I do get what you're saying, Cuthbert. I mean, there are some eyebrows to be raised when you look at that stuff.
It was just because Justin's such a hardo. He never misses any time, and he fights through every injury.
Well, I mean, come on.
He's never missed a day.
Again, I don't know exactly what these guys are dealing with, but, like, and again, this is something that's, like, afflicts the entire NBA, but it just doesn't feel to me like they're pushing it, and there has to be a level of buy-in with that. Mm-hmm. And you hear Jakob Poeltl on day one saying, yeah, we're not, you know, trying to win anything this year. It just got, like, a little bit country club in that we're all – you know, we're all happy and we're all working towards a common goal here, which is to not be that great, which is, I guess, ethical enough.
Yeah. And you know, to your point, I think if Yak had come out and said that, which, by the way, listen, I think, you know, we often laughed, or at least I do, every opening day in every sport, you know, every media day when, you know, I always joke about how no one ever wants to tell the truth, or everyone's just, you know, has zero self-awareness because every team thinks they're going to compete for a championship. So I actually, in a way, commended Yak on Media Day for saying, you know, let's be honest here, we know we're not competing for a championship this year. But at the same time, again, I think it would seem more shameless if they had said things like that and then were coming out and getting blown out every night. That's a different story, right? But they said all those things. Darko talked about the process over the results, and at least you can see that there is, you know, there's a consistent effort there. There's a consistent identity of a team that is building towards something, even if it's not going to show up in the wins column.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's much different to be covering the spread and being really, like, close to, in these games, and learning and having growth from some players that maybe you hadn't expected to take these leaps, whether that's Grady Dick or some of the players that weren't even, like, going to be starters on this team. Obviously, the injuries have kind of given an opportunity to see some growth. But I'm glad you mentioned Darko, because I wonder for you when you're watching this, like, and this is going to be a tough season for everyone, but a tough season for a head coach too, because you want to keep guys competitive, but you know that maybe that isn't the end goal, right, to win a championship this year. So how do you think that he's done so far with keeping that, you know, the light, energetic, but also competitive nature of the Raptors? And how important will that be down the stretch when it's not 2-12 and it's 5-30? Like, you know, yeah, when it's way worse and it's not like the exciting, you know, overtime losses, and they might, you know, might be really deep into January, February, and things might not be as fresh. Like, where does Darko play in that mentality that the Raptors have become, and where they're going to take, especially as a guy that's only been a coach with them for a year and a bit?
I think his positivity, his consistency from that perspective, never really getting too down after loss. I think he's struck the right balance so far for a young team that is piling up losses. It does seem like, you know, he does have buy-in from the locker room, has a buy-in from the core players that they, you know, it is about process over results, but also has a buy-in to continue the process, right? To not abandon it just because the losses are piling up. Having said that, you know, as we know in every sport, at the end of the day, coaches will get judged by wins and losses. Now, Darko's in a bit of an unfair position in the sense that last year was such a write-off. You know, he got the job based on an offensive identity that he wanted to implement that he actually couldn't implement based on the team he inherited. And, you know, that team last year was such a mixed bag that wanted to compete, but they weren't actually good enough. And then by the time they made the trade, it was too late. So kind of can't judge him on last year. This year, you know, it's an open secret what they're trying to do this year, so it's hard to judge him this year. But at the same time, you know, you're going to be going into year three of his coaching tenure next year, not knowing a lot. The one thing I'll say, as much as I praised the consistency, as much as I think he's done a great job from that standpoint, there have been a couple times this year in late game scenarios where I would have wished maybe the timeout management was better. I would have wished the decisions or the play calls coming out of late game timeouts and crunch time were better. And I know some people roll their eyes at that and say, well, you know, they're trying to tank and that's why, but I promise you that's not, like, a coach is not purposely trying to lose games in November. They might be playing guys that don't give them the best advantage, but in those crunch time moments, I think he just maybe made a couple mistakes, didn't manage his timeouts properly. And those are the things that do concern me a little bit if he is the coach, say, a year from now, or when this team is trying to win again.
We're on the line with Joe Cascera, lead Raptors and NBA reporter for The Score, also host of The Unfiltered Show. Are you surprised that there aren't more teams doing exactly what the Raptors are doing. Like, yeah, there's some bad teams. Utah definitely tanking. But you look at the Eastern Conference, some of the best teams are the ones fighting for the bottom of the basement with the Toronto Raptors, who are 15 out of 15 right now in the Eastern Conference. It's really only the Wiz that are in that category, it seems, in the Eastern Conference. Again, nothing's promised in the draft lottery, but a little surprised, Joe, that like there are teams that are, you know, putting out an honest effort.
Yeah, no, I'd say I'm a little surprised, but again, it's so early in the season. And, you know, I'd say check back in with me like a month from now, because even a team like Brooklyn, who on paper expected to be one of the two or three worst teams in the league, looks like they're tanking. They got their picks back, so they're able to tank. Right now, they've been surprisingly competitive. You know, they were, I think they're 5-7 or something along those lines. It's all fine and dandy like a month into the season, but, you know, 2 months in when the losses are starting to pile up, they're going to let go of the rope eventually. And that's when you'll see like a team like Brooklyn go from surprisingly competitive to all of a sudden you look up one day and they're 20 games under 500. And Utah is going to get there. Washington's definitely going to be there. You know, another, like Portland right now is another team. Young team, playing exciting. They're 6-8, but they're nowhere near that good. The losses will pile up for them. And that's why, you know, it's maybe funny for people to hear me say this, but the Raptors might have given themselves a head start by losing, 10 or 12 of their first 14 games or whatever it is, because there are a lot of bad teams, and there will be a lot of bad teams by the end of the year, especially as they continue to watch Cooper Flagg and Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey and all these top prospects coming out next year. And the Raptors, their 22 of their first 25 games are against teams that made the playoffs last year or finished 500 or better, excuse me. And 15 of their last 20, something along those lines, are against teams that were losing teams last year. So if you are one of these fans that only cares about the lottery this year, that back half of the schedule, back quarter of the schedule, might concern you and how easy it is. So from that perspective, you know, again, if you're only looking at this season as a lottery thing, as a tank job, the losses they're piling now might be important.
Well, it's like 4-point games in hockey. It'll be kind of the flip side of basketball, but yeah, with the intentions being to go after Cooper Flagg and the top end of that draft. Yeah. Speaking of competitiveness, are you a big NBA Cup guy?
I mean, I'm a big NBA Cup guy only in the sense that, like, you know, I guess I appreciate the effort that the league put into creating something early in the season, but, you know, it's hard to buy too much into it. Maybe once you get to the knockout rounds, for sure. Like, the guys definitely want the extra money. There is, you know, something to play for. But, you know, it's a little hard to be that invested in each round-robin game.
Hey, it's not that hard for me. I love it. I think the NBA Cup's great. And the Cavaliers, I think, are into it, too. 15-0, they pile on the points, knowing this game against the Celtics is to come. Like, it takes a special circumstance, I feel like, for a team to really embrace it. Felt like the Lakers were kind of half in until they were in the championship, and then they wanted it. Indiana was definitely the story last year. But yeah, I feel like that the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are 15-0 to start the season, want this NBA Cup. I think they can carry it a little bit in terms of interest and intrigue in the fan base.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And I think, look, like I was saying, like the premise of it, I think, was really brilliant from the league's perspective, and that trying to create some meaning early in the season, and also, you know, by tying it to the regular season, every game except the championship game, it doesn't seem like a charade. You know, it doesn't kind of seem like a circus act that is this weird offshoot thing. It's still within the season. I think that's important. But from Cleveland's perspective, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, they look like a team that is very much built to win it, in that they're hot early. They're talented enough to play any given night. Clearly, they haven't lost yet, but maybe people don't quite buy them yet as a true championship contender. But it's like, you know, a tournament that ends in early December, absolutely they can win it.
How was the Raptors purple cord up close and personal when you saw it, or if you got to see it?
Yeah, it's you know, it's nice. I was hoping that they had the, you know, the dinosaur, the raptor doing the Vince dunk as the logo. I was hoping that would be the cup jerseys and that would be at center court with the cup. I thought that would have been a good look, but obviously I don't make the decisions here.
In a future life, you can be a court designer.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. But it was, you know, it was nice enough. The courts, they're hit and miss. You got some that I find like almost too distracting, especially on TV. They probably look better up close. But I'd say the Raptors one is probably the same. It looked nice in person. Not sure how it came across on TV.
all right, we're not winning many games, but we might be right in the middle of the pack in terms of court design. We'll take it. Joe, we appreciate your time tonight. Enjoy the game. And Pascal Siakam's return, I'm sure, even though it's not the first time, he'll get a rousing applause once again from Raptors fans.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Also, Gennaro Pargo's return. Gennaro Pargo played five Raptors in 2004, wow. And I saw a welcome back Gennaro Pargo sign that the Raptors had for him in the visiting locker room. He's an assistant on the Pacers now. I thought that was hilarious.
Deep in the archives.
Not just the Siakam night. Gennaro Pargo, welcome back.
Wow, that's
30-year celebration runs real.
There you go. Thanks so much, Joe.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's great. That's Joe Cashiero of The Score, a lead reporter, NBA reporter there, and host of the Unfiltered show. It is Pascal Siakam's return again to Scotiabank Arena. We'll definitely have some tidbits on that in my best bets.
I need more basketball people embracing the NBA Cup.
Everyone, I don't think people like hate it. They just
awesome.
Are kind of mad about it.
Steph Curry went crazy after he buried Clay in the Mavericks. Like, that was great
was
night.
Cool.
These nights are definitely more interesting than regular NBA nights, and that everyone's like, I think they're a little afraid to embrace it because what everybody else
different.
Is saying. All their colleagues are like, you know, they're not quite in. So everyone's, it's like no one wants to dip their you know, they're dipping the toe. Mm-hmm. No one wants to just jump right in.
You are the cheerleader
I'm
of it.
I'm cannonballing into the NBA Cup pool.
The current favorite to win the NBA Cup is the?
I would say Cavaliers, but
no,
I don't know.
New York Knicks.
Yeah, they got an easy group.
Yeah, well, we got the Cavs second there.
It's a vulnerable favorite if I've ever heard of
it. OKC third and Golden State fourth.
I think the Cavaliers want to win, so
yes.
I'm
you're heavily invested.
I need a team to take it seriously, and I think they are, so I'm going to be watching the Cavs.
Perfect. They were one of the recipes that we decided last week make for a NBA Cup champion. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll take a quick break. We're going to go through some of the great weekend moments that we have. I mean, Bills beat the Chiefs, Argos beat the Blue Bombers, Leafs beat the Oilers in OT. They had the Tyson and Paul chaos, which might not have been great, but it was a lot of memorable moments from this past
weekend. It was
weekend.
A big weekend.
As well, Ovi with a hat trick last night. So our text line question of the day, and you can send it to us here over the break. Will Ovi break the goal record this season? He's only 29 away from surpassing Gretzky, which would be a pretty crazy pace for a guy of his age. But at
might
this
win
point,
the Rocket while he's doing
he's it. On pace for 63 goals, which is unbelievable. And he's got on the ice again tonight. We've got that game on Sportsnet Plus. It's the Caps and the Utah Hockey Club at 9 p.m. He just feels like he's putting the pedal to the metal this year.
Yeah, traveling back-to-back might be tough for Ovi at 39, but there's not much that can slow him down at this point.
All right, shoot us a text at 59590. We'll take a peek on the other side. We'll look at some of the greatest moments from this weekend, and we'll talk to Liam McHugh to wrap up our show.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan pregame. Sportsnet 590, the Fan. After us will be the Pacers and the Raptors, a 7 o'clock pregame show here on Sportsnet 1. A little later, Golden State and the Clippers with a 10:30 start. Sportsnet Plus got a nice collection of NHL games for you. Jackets, Bruins, Avs, Flyers, Ducks, Stars, Caps, Utah. We just talked about Ovi and the Caps and the Red Wings and San Jose all on Sportsnet Plus. This weekend was prime flicking around on the remote because we had a lot going on. It's hard to even like power rank all the good stuff that happened, but we should give some credit to our Toronto Argos for beating the Blue Bombers, who, I mean, the Argos are just unstoppable against the Blue Bombers. They were almost double digit dogs that morning. I think the line moved to like 9, but to go out there and be another dominant performance, especially with another backup QB situation. It's like reminiscent from the last Grey Cup that they won. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, same old
City
story.
City of champs.
Same old story if you're the Bombers Bombers fan dealing with another loss to the Argos. Honestly, there needs to be, like, there's studies for everything in sports, like every team, performance, analytics, like the amount of information on everything is through the roof. Everything is studied. Everything is broken down to the nth degree. But we need someone to do a study on the Toronto Argos. Like, what is the championship secret? Why are they the team who's not always good? has its struggles. No. Definitely, its market share is something that is routinely looked at as a weakness. Mm-hmm. But they, when they get there, and it's, again, not every year, but when they get there, they don't lose. What is it about the Argos that puts them in a position to time and time again,
they got
despite
that clutch
the quarterback,
gene.
What is the clutch gene? If anyone has the clutch gene, it is the Argos. So if you're trying to figure out what the clutch gene is or how to manipulate it in your favor, because that's sports now, information age in sports, they need to study the Toronto Argos because they just get it done every single time they're in position. They are not the standard in the CFL, but they are the championship standard in the CFL.
Yeah, Argos 19-6 in the Grey Cup, the best mark of all time, 19th Grey Cup, which is the most in CFL history. And they won two of the last three Grey Cups, and they just annihilate the Bombers every time they get a chance in the Grey Cup.
Kind of felt bad for the Bombers, honestly.
No, I didn't. Nice to see a championship come to this fine city. All right. We're going to talk a little hockey with Liam McHugh, NHL and TNT host, joining us. Liam, we appreciate you jumping on. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Of course. We're great. We had, like, a lot going on this past weekend. We're reminiscing on all the highs, and I think one of them we got to start with is Ovi with another multi-point performance, a hat trick just last night. We're realizing that this is a lot closer than maybe many had anticipated, this goal chase, whether you thought it was going to take a season or not. Technically, he's on pace to do it this year. I guess unbelievable maybe has this start been for him, a guy of that age just finding a fountain of youth and chasing down Gretzky?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point we know it feels like a foregone conclusion, right? He's going to pass Gretzky. You know, Wayne's been on our show. At this point, he's just celebrating it. Like, he knows it's going to happen. He's been saying it for a while, and now it looks like, I mean, they're saying potentially in March. The fact that at 39 years old, he has a chance to lead the NHL in goals, to score in the upper 50s in goals. That in and of itself is truly remarkable. But then you go back, remember the beginning of last season?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looked like, you know, those year-to-year moments with some hockey players where it feels like, well, the legs are gone. It just happened. And maybe he puts up 20 goals, maybe not. And maybe this chase becomes the type of situation where the Caps aren't a playoff team. Alexander Ovechkin does not look like himself anymore, and we wait several years of watching this guy score 18 to 25 goals. It's not that thrilling. Now the cool thing about this is you get to watch him look like prime Alexander Ovechkin. You get to watch him on a team that's winning, on a team that's going to the playoffs, and he's scoring meaningful goals. I don't know. It's been exciting, and I think the cool thing is what you're seeing from him and what you're seeing from Sidney Crosby at this age. It's something we haven't seen in a long time in hockey. And I think it also goes back to the fact that, like, we get some great stories about, you know, Gretzky and the old-time hockey. And we get some of those stories because they live different lives than the players do now. And players, especially you look at a guy like Sidney Crosby, they take care of themselves in a way that athletes in the past, like, simply did not. And they're finely tuned, and they can still play at an elite level. And for me, it's been a blast. It's been fun to watch Ovi do this.
And the amazing thing about Ovi, he's got a little of that old school in him in terms of the new training methods and taking everything to the utmost seriously. I don't know if that's part of the story. It is part of the story with Ovechkin. How much of it, I'm not really sure. But you're right. It's been an incredible roller coaster ride because it's been, oh, he's getting it. And then there's like, oh, he's not getting it. And then he's getting it again. And it's, oh, no, it's not going to happen. And now it's firmly going to happen, at least it seems. And again, that could be dated back, what, 10 years when he has a down season. You're like, oh, Ovechkin's not the same anymore. And then he wins more Rocket Richards and becomes the leading goal scorer in the history of the NHL, or at least imminently. But I wonder what the catalyst of this is, like, this season. Is it the fact that Washington is just a really good team all of a sudden? Like, how much of that is powering what Ovechkin is doing? And I guess vice versa.
I think it's a little bit of I like the idea of, like, under the radar surprise energy, right? It's like, what are your expectations? It's sort of like going to a movie where, like, you're blown away by a movie because you went in, you had absolutely no expectation for it at all. And then you're like, wow, like, that hits me. And I feel like the Caps are kind of like that. They flew under the radar. They were, let's be honest, if you looked at the playoff field from last year in the East and said, one of these teams isn't going to make it next year, every single person saying the Capitals, and rightfully so, minus 37 goal differential and made the playoffs last year, they no business being there. They made some interesting moves in the offseason, some names that we've all heard of, but a lot of moves where you're kind of like, I know that guy, but I don't know that they're going to get the value that they want out of it, and I don't know how it's going to work out. Well, they've worked out pretty well so far. Pierre Dubois, Chychrun, they've been good additions. Strome has been excellent. Mm-hmm. What Ovechkin has found in Strome is in some ways what he had with Backstrom. and Backstrom teed him up for so many goals throughout his career. He now has Strome, who it seems like only wants to get assists if Ovechkin's scoring, right? He's like, I'm just setting up every one of your goals. And for me, the cool thing is now you get to appreciate Strome's game at a different level. And, you know, here's a guy who came into the league with a lot of hype and it didn't always work out, and he has found a place here. I also think Spencer Carberry deserves a ton of credit. You know, I mean, he's barely older than Ovechkin. And you got to control that room, make them feel like what they're doing, your plan is the right plan, a winning plan, and they bought in. So Spencer Carberry is one of those guys who he's got to be in the race again. I mean, he was right there last year, and I think he's got to be in the race again early this season for Coach of the Year.
Yeah, he's leader in the clubhouse now for the Jack Adams. We keep a close eye on that one because we had thought maybe Sheldon Keefe would get off to a hotter start, but it looks like it's Spencer Carberry. Let's go on the flip side of that. I think the hottest seat for a coach firing might be the Boston Bruins with Montgomery or even Sullivan or the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, you're looking at teams that are underperforming. I don't know if it's because of coaching. I think it's roster construction and age. But if you had to look at a coach that might be the bottom of the list in terms of the most successful between those two, it kind of feels like a toss-up in a sense. But if there was one move to be made that would actually spark a team, make something concrete in terms of adjustments, would it be firing either of those head coaches?
Listen, I don't know that it changes everything. I think they're both good coaches. I really do. And I think there's something to be said about the fact that when you're Mike Sullivan and you've won two cups, you know, it's a difficult situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that firing a coach in Pittsburgh changes a lot. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I don't think it suddenly makes Erik Karlsson a good fit on your team, you know, who's a brilliant player and is going to the Hall of Fame, but it just doesn't feel like it ever worked in Pittsburgh, his style. With Jim Montgomery, I do wonder if there's another level that this Bruins team can play at. And I think Jim Montgomery will get a job instantly somewhere else if it opens up. I think he's a great coach. But you do wonder if they just get that bump, that energy of like, hey, new message, new guy in the room. But what you always hear about the Boston Bruins is they've gone from captain to captain to captain, right? They char forever. And then Char's gone and you have Bergeron. I mean, talk about passing the torch. And now it's Marchand. Mm-hmm. You have great leadership. The room is solid. Marchand embraced Montgomery when Montgomery was yelling at him. In fact, he was sitting there, he's incredulous that we were even asking about this. This is a coach yelling at us. That's what's supposed to happen when you're not playing well. I just think right now, getting rid of Montgomery doesn't solve the problem of Elias Lindholm has to do more. He has to be better, right? And it's been a disappointment. He's admitted it as much. I think there's more there for the Boston Bruins. I think he's the odds-on favorite, unfortunately, Montgomery, to be fired. But I would also say that I'm almost surprised at this point that we are getting close to American Thanksgiving and we haven't had someone fired. Right. For a while there, guys, didn't it feel like this was the NHL was turning into the Premier League?
Where it's
you had a bad week, you're gone. Mm-hmm. And then we were just rotating coaches. The other big thing out there is the fact that Joel Quenneville's name is out there, right? And if you want to go down the road and you want to bring in Joel Quenneville, you're bringing in a Hall of Fame coach who knows how to win, who's going to command a room. And the fact that he's out there, it changes the dynamic of teams that may want to make a move.
We're talking to Liam McHugh, NHL on TNT. I'm surveying the entire landscape here. We're, what, 5-6 weeks into the season. And, you know, atop the league standings are two teams in the Jets and Carolina Hurricanes who have everything to prove in the postseason, like have not proved themselves at that level. A lot of questions about whether or not they can parlay regular season success to postseason success. And really from there, like I'm not seeing anything that comes across and hits me over the head as special. And when I do look at that even closer, I keep coming back to the Florida Panthers as the team that could be just the most dominant still. Is there someone out there, like if we just started the playoffs right now, that could hang with the Florida Panthers?
I think it's tough. And I brought this up last week on the show with Henrik Lundqvist and Paul Bissonnette and Nancy Carter. And this at this time, Winnipeg had just come off the win at Madison Square Garden, 15-1. And they rolled the Rangers, right? They went on the road to start that road trip and just they were clearly outclassed, a team that had not been playing well but is expected to compete for a Stanley Cup. And everyone there still said they'd rather take the Florida Panthers, which is pretty remarkable, pretty amazing to me, simply because the Florida Panthers play a style of hockey that's so hard and so grinding, and they do it from start to finish throughout the entire year, where I just wonder about wear and tear. You go back-to-back Stanley Cup finals. The one team I'm going to put out there is a team that's 500 and would worry me, and that is Colorado. Mm. I really think if Colorado doesn't have to get great goaltending.
They got to get healthy. That's about it.
Just healthy mm-hmm. and okay goaltending, and they would scare me. Any team that has three guys that, if they go on a tear the rest of the way, could win the MVP, which they do, in McKinnon, in McCart, and I think Rantanen is right there as well, should scare the hell out of everybody out there. If that team gets healthy, if Georgiev is confident, watch out. Colorado would be that team for me.
Okay, well, let's talk goalies, because Justin and I are doing a little bit of an experiment every Monday. We're picking some of the players that we think we're going to lock in to Team Canada's roster, and we're stuck on goaltending. There's a lot of names, but there's not a lot of leaders whatsoever in terms of like a lock. We put Jordan Binnington in there this morning or this afternoon. We've got Thompson in the mix, Montembeau, Aiden Hill. Who else do we have? A couple like guys that are having okay.
Stuart Skinner, Cam Talbot. She's being nice. It's pretty rough out here.
It's rough.
I don't know if you guys have the same roster like anxiety and decisions that need to be made, but we're dealing with it here with the goaltending situation in Canada.
We don't have that anxiety. Yeah. There's other anxiety.
Your anxiety is at which goaltender to start.
Yeah, listen, I think there's anxiety because we'd love to have Thatcher Demko healthy. I mean that would be delightful. Amazing thing is, to be in the States and have some hockey envy from Hockey Canada, which almost never occurs at all. Mm-hmm. I think Binnington's the lock, and I think it's because I think he's a big game player, and I don't know that you get great Binnington every single night, but I think in big moments you get great Binnington. I would also say from an entertainment standpoint, there's really no one I'd rather have in net than Jordan Binnington right there, because he's unpredictable. He's a bit of a wild card. He can fly off the handle. After that, though, you're right. I mean, it's a battle for like backup and beyond, because I don't think there's a lot of people really establishing themselves as a clear cut. There's a lot of people in that exact tier. And I guess you want someone who's hot at that point, confident at that point. But, yeah, I mean, you got a team right now that's I feel like you're playing Binnington. Like, if you're going to win, you are playing him. And he's the guy. And here's the thing.
I love how you say that with a huge smile on your face.
Yeah, you're pumped. I know.
It's fun.
Okay, well, we did lock him in today. So, thankfully, he was our one selection today that we had to, pick one goalie. He's locked in. All right, one last one for you, Lynn. We appreciate your time. It was a big moment in the game on Saturday night. Leafs and Oilers. Ryan Reeves hit on Darnell Nurse, which looked terrible. Nurse obviously coming up bleeding and definitely deserving, I think, of the five games. Your opinion on the situation and the result, the five games, and Darnell Nurse looks like he's going to be out for like a week or two. So when you evaluate that, did they get it right?
I think these things are tough, and I think the only thing that you could argue right now is that he and Tanner Janot did not get the exact same penalty, because I think you're talking about similar type hits. Reeves has a history with some suspensions. I do believe this. I think Ryan Reeves is a really honest player. He is the type of guy, like, yeah, he plays a style. He's going to hit you, and he's going to fight. He does not fight guys who don't want to fight. He wants to hit you. He is not looking to... I really don't think he's going out of his way to look and take out people's heads, and I don't think he's trying to injure anyone. I don't think he's that type of player at all. I think this was a well-intended, really difficult, really hard, aggressive hit gone wrong. I know there are people that are going to blame Darnell Nurse for not getting his head up. I'm not going to do that. I think you're coming around. You probably should get your head up, but I'm not going to blame him in that situation. It was interesting. We had this discussion today. We had a call with a bunch of people at TNT, and someone did bring up the idea of, like, you know, a little bit's on the goalie too. There's got to be a huge communication factor where it's like, that puck's coming, it's coming on the court. Look up. I think they got it right simply because we can't have that hit anymore. We just can't. And I think about the idea of this Oilers team, which is built to win, is cup or bust. because of what happened last year and because of the elite talent on their team. And if that hit happens, say second round of the playoffs. Oof. And it's so at that point, what's a suspension worth? Because if Nurse is out and he can't go the rest of the way and the Oilers get eliminated, it's bad for hockey. It's bad for the entire sport. So to me, I think they got it right. I think this is the amount of games.
Yeah, well said. And that other goaltender is also a Canadian goaltender.
I was going to say,
that,
communication
so.
A problem.
So
too,
we will check down. Stuart Skinner needs to also work on the communication if he wants to make our team. Liam, we appreciate your time tonight. Always great to catch up. We'll talk soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Jess.
Thanks so much. Liam McHugh, NHL and TNT host, of course. Okay, so lots to go through tonight. We've got a good big Raptors game. We're both picking picks from the Raptors game tonight. And shout out to Justin, who nailed his fading the old guys bet on Friday.
Thank you.
Yeah, you did
plus
a great job.
+725, I think it was.
You faded both of the old
fighters. I know how old dudes lose.
Yeah? Well, it worked. So let's keep it rolling.
You want to talk about Tyson and Paul?
Yeah, quickly, let's do our best bets. And then we'll
you want to do
the
best bets first. Okay.
That was my segue into best bets. Best bets. Mine will be Pascal Siakam. You know, he loves coming back to play against his former team, and the Raptors don't have a lot of ways to, like, stop Pascal. So my Pascal ladder, inspired by Justin, who I think is actually getting a ladder for Christmas, 25-plus points plus 185. You can go all the way up to 35-plus points. So I think Pascal goes off tonight. I don't think that means that they win, though. It looks like you're in agreement.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know. I guess we're going to be talking about this through the, you know, the entirety of the year. Like, how conscious are the Raptors of being competitive and losing? Like, I can't imagine that you are that aware and that on board, right? I think at a certain point, the competitiveness is going to yield victories. Mm. And I think against an Indiana Pacers team, which is not all that good, and will have, you know, maybe the bump from Pascal Siakam in his return. But I think the Raptors are going to start winning these games where they're, you know, dogs by 3-4
We don't
points.
Want them to win, do
I
we?
I know, but I don't think that's something that they're actually thinking about. Like, I think they're going to steal a couple of these 50-50 games. I think this is closer to 50-50. I think if the Raptors are laying or, you know, paying you 140 mm-hmm. Against a team like Indiana at this point, unless this tank is more sophisticated than I could ever imagine, these are going to be some decent bets. I'm going to take the Raptors plus 140.
That's Bunker's dog of the day, or Welly's dog.
I thought it was my phone or something.
No, it wasn't. Okay, so we got a Monday Night Football game, which has the Cowboys hosting, and they are the only team in all four major sports to not win at home this season. Jake Paul has more wins at that stadium than the Cowboys do this year. Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, thoughts?
It was brutal.
It really was.
It really was.
And
bad.
I felt bad as, like, a society that we bought into that. And we were like, yeah, this is going to be good. And then 1 minute in, I was like, I can't watch this.
I don't think you can feel bad for anyone involved because they're all just getting, like, stank and rich off these things. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's great. But we really are suckers.
There's
65 million of us are
that,
just
I fought through that live stream where I was stuck on Mike Tyson's butt cheeks for like 40 minutes.
That was
minutes,
the best moment of the entire
night.
And that
night. Was the best part
the
of the whole
shoot. Was great, but honestly, the Tyson
actually,
memes
yeah, the
are
co-main,
the best.
The women absolutely they delivered. Were, that was were, worth everything.
Yeah, it was pretty
but
good.
But then the length of it being so long, like, just, like, get these things going. Like, we need pace.
Yeah.
And we need streaming ability. So if you're the NFL, you're obviously calling during the show being like, you can't have Christmas day games without, you know, the capacity. But we bought in and it did not deliver.
The streaming, it scares me. I'm an old school traditional guy. I need the sure thing that is.
We need Sportsnet and Sportsnet
yeah.
Plus.
It's streaming. You know, it's good to have the option. But, you know, I hope Netflix gets it sorted out, certainly. Mm-hmm. And they will, because they have the, you know, that is such a smashing success. You have 65 million people watching, even if there is buffering issues. Mm-hmm. It's just something you got to clean up and be better the next time. There's clearly a market for these things. So I expect more freak show fights like this, honestly. There's such a market for this. It's going to keep going.
I don't know if I can get
I hope it doesn't involve Mike Tyson,
again.
But it's just going to keep happening.
I don't know if I can get...
It's Shaq and Gronk teasing the next one.
Yeah, they were ready to cut a promo.
Yeah.
It was an interesting...
I don't want to see Tyson do it again, though.
No, I think that must be... That's got to be it.
I hope so.
Like, it was hard. It was a hard watch.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah, I was feeling sad.
I am heartened every time that I know Jake Paul's not that good, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, he just needs to get a real tough opponent in the ring.
I'd like to see it. I don't think we ever will.
Okay. That was Monday night for us, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. You've got the Pacers and the Raptors up on Sportsnet in 5 minutes. Enjoy the night. See you tomorrow.